east of Salem.
This is board time on Wednesday, 19 February.
Ready, sir?
We're ready.
Okay, copies of agendas, if anybody needs them. First item on the agenda, last week we talked about the Washington Association of County Officials invoice, mm-hmm. and there were questions.
Mm-hmm.
I pulled off the county accounting system what I believe to be the dues that okay. had been paid, and there was a jump from one year to another.
Okay.
I was wrong about that. Axel actually went to Waco and got the actual numbers.
There is Axel right again.
That was
so he's showing up his boss. So I told him not to do that, but he did it anyway.
Anyway, so yeah, we've got the invoice to either approve or not approve for Waco. I did talk to their executive director, and he sent me the spreadsheet that goes back to, well, it goes
2007.
Back to 2007. There hasn't been a significant change. What I mean by that is, like, you know, 1, 2, 3% since 2007. It did go up a little bit, I think, from this year. So last year I have here is 13. I think we're going from 51 to 52.
54.
So there is about a 4% jump this year.
Why? How do they calculate it?
Two ways. Everyone's charged a single base fee, and I should have probably asked why or how they established that base fee. And then the second part of it is based on population. And he said we may, in a given year, because we're Clark County, see a little bit more of a percentage increase uptick than others on that second portion because we grow faster. So it's based on census numbers, and when they update the census, because that portion of the fee, like WASAC's, is based totally on population, when we grow faster than other places, we get a little bit bigger of a bump. When we don't, we don't. So it's just based on our population.
Okay. Is this a take-it-or-leave-it invoice, or is there some... that's their guideline, and it leaves us some feedback, some wiggle room to say, you know, we want to stay members, but we're not using all your services. We'd like to be able to, we're willing to pay two-thirds that or something like that.
Anything you all agree to is negotiable.
Yeah.
This, like WASAC, is done through, it's based on a policy that's built by the board of directors and then rolled out to the member counties. So it's very similar in that approach, and so it's what their board decided on, and it's what we in the past have agreed to.
Yeah, and as a member of the association, we agree to abide by their policies and procedures.
I don't, you know, are we contractually obligated to pay them that amount? I don't think so. I mean, I think you can negotiate anything you want. It's just...
I see two parts to this. One is we have an invoice in front of us that they're expecting to have paid, and this is probably not the time to say, you know, we'll pay half of that. It probably ought to direct pay this, but then
going forward,
we ought to examine, let's say between now and the next invoice that comes through next month, consider really what's the benefit here. We use WASAC a lot,
yep,
but how much do we use NACO?
Well, and that, you know, that's a conversation that may or may not take a little bit more than the month. What I would suggest, and you're right, as commissioners, and I was very involved with WASAC when I was a commissioner, I liked it as an organization because it was a place to do everything from research different aspects of your job and how other counties are doing it to just going up and venting about the job with people who know what you're talking about for a while. So I really liked it. But Waco, who you'll want to talk to, and I think maybe that'd be an awesome topic for the next elected officials breakfast, and you guys, you know, maybe you could go, because Waco is really that one that supports your other county electeds, right? You've got the clerk, the treasurer, you know, you've got these other county electeds who I think, you know, are represented by Waco and who they utilize for the same services we utilize for WASAC. And I will tell you, I did talk to Eric Johnson yesterday, and, you know, there has historically been a conversation about two organizations versus one. How, you know, what is the need? What is the difference? I think there's, like everything else we deal with, strong opinions either way. I think some people probably think they could be merged and we only really need one county family organization. I think you'll get arguments from other people that say, you know, absolutely not. We need the two organizations because, you know, there's different needs.
So we also have a Washington Association of Treasurers. Is our treasurer pay into that?
Yeah, I feel like
Assessors Association.
There probably are subgroups. Yeah, and I might be mixed up. Maybe a county officials might be. You also have Washington County officials who are appointed by you all, public works directors, community development directors, and that kind of thing. But my impression of these folks is not that statistics for other elected officials.
I'm curious how many times we duplicate in our memberships, and the substantial amounts for each one. And when something came up the other day that I understood that as participating board members of the different associations, that they were supposed to pay our cost to attend and participate in their meetings.
Yeah.
Maybe the case was some, but certainly not all.
And I asked, because Mark had mentioned that to me, and I asked Eric about that. And so with, like, WASAC, because you've been on the board, are you still on the board right now?
Mm-hmm.
So you're on the board. So, like Eric said, well, look, if we ask Commissioner Mielke to come over for a board meeting to Lake Chelan or someplace, he's coming to do specific WASAC business as a board member who pay his way. The other one, I mean, the one that you always think about is LSC. If you're going up there to do the Legislative Steering Committee, let's say Steve's going up there to do that, it just works out that they allow the individual counties to pay for that cost because LSC, every county has a representative. So, I mean, as an organization, you can imagine having 39 reps plus maybe staff or other people come for that meeting would just get extremely expensive. So it's kind of a depends. You know, it depends on if you're there. I remember one time I helped work on the bylaws for WASAC, and they did cover my travel cost, my car cost to go up there on those mornings and work on the bylaws.
Commissioner Stewart was invited to come up to serve on a panel for conservation districts, and they paid for his travel.
They do pay for some when you work on.
Yeah, when it's kind of WASAC.
I never submitted my bill to them.
But if it's the routine Legislative Steering Committee, Legislative Liaison, then the county covers
different.
That.
So some we do, some we don't.
Traditionally, this bill's been paid all at once at the beginning of the year. So, Commissioner Madore, you said...
Well, this is a one-month bill. This is divided into 12.
Well, they've also got the annual amount. And the county, in the past, as far back as I have looked, has paid it all in January. So, are you suggesting that we pay this monthly amount now and then do a little more footwork?
Well, that's an invoice for 1 month, right, from them. So they already gave us a monthly payment.
Right, but in the past, based on this...
I got that.
Okay.
I got that.
Yeah. So if we pay them this, they won't be disappointed.
Right. So I'm thinking, yeah, we pay them that because they're expecting that. But behind this, I think, rather than try to work out all the details through the research, I'd like to be able to, between now and the next invoice, spend time with you and Axel and find out from our elected officials how useful is this, and is it basically a lobbying organization? And if so, what are they lobbying for? And if it's a resource that helps our elected officials, because it helps our elected officials do a better job, I'd like to know that. I'd like to be able to hear from elected officials.
Okay.
So behind the scenes afterwards, we'll just simply, I'll work with you.
Okay, and then we'll see if there are other associations like Commissioner Mielke, the treasurers, assessors, clerks.
Yeah,
that's good.
Because I'm thinking...
Because this could be the Department of Redundancy Department.
If we have the other one specifically, I'm not sure whether or not we need this one here.
Yeah, okay. Very good.
And I assume, this is where I always make my senior policy analyst joke about I'm the president of the National Senior Policy Analyst Association.
Yeah, cancel that.
All right. Okay, so pay 1 month and we'll get some background. Easy enough.
Okay, item number two. We've got some folks on this side of the table. Oliver's got the lead on the industrial land bank item, and I'll direct your attention. Oliver put together a memo, and I put a little cover on top of it. You know that? Yeah. Oliver paid you a visit.
You got something here, you say?
Well, I gave it to Anna, who should have put it in your board time folder.
Okay.
Thank you, Anna. I got mine. I'm not sure about him.
I brought an extra.
Oh, it's here. It's here. Anna?
You didn't get yours? What is it?
It's in that pile on his desk.
It's probably that pile that I...
Folder number 162 on the left side.
What are
you looking for?
That.
Oh, you got it.
You got it.
Okay. Is it in there?
No.
What are you looking for?
This.
Show me.
He just handed me this.
Oh.
And I wondered if it was in there.
Oh.
No, I don't see it.
No, it's on your desk.
Oh.
I'll go get it.
No, it's fine. He has one.
I got it.
Okay.
Okay. We've been really busy losing papers.
In my defense, he did not tell me it was a four-time issue.
Anna's fabulous. Okay, since I haven't read it, what do you got?
I bored time. I'm bored looking at
it. So, okay, you took away my excuse.
So my question is, Oliver, is that the request for additional funds, the request for additional funds is for outside consultant?
It will be for outside consultant because of the nature of the application. And it is not on my work program. This is a brand new application, and the request, and I think I've given you some background on this. This is an application that I've been in the works for, I would say, at least more than a year, that Harrison have put us on notice that he is working with the property owner to potentially submit an application to the county for our consideration. This is in line with the state statute on industrial land bank, the two sections, section RCW 3670A, 365, and 367. 365 requires when you have a user, then we have to process the application because there is a user. We know how much acreage the user needs and whatever their needs are, so we process that application. The 367 is more speculative. You don't have a user, therefore you got to do a master plan of the site. You have to do a programmatic environmental review of the site, and then that will enable you, and the associated development regulation of that site, that would then be something that this county will review and approve. So Mr. Horenstein is using the 367 on Dennis Lagler property. So there are two sites totaling about 600 acres or more. So to do the master plan and to do the associated environmental review, I have put an estimate on the premise that we have an existing environmental review that was done in 07. Whoever is going to help us do this may rely on that a little bit, but that's to the least that they can do. But we need to do a supplemental to that environmental review, and we do not have anyone on staff that could do that in the county. Environmental services can do it. Community planning can do it. Community development can do it. Typically, we hire an outside to help us with that work. So I've put this estimate. If it comes lower than that, our community planning will return back to the general fund. But this is my best guess. I've asked others in Lewis County who have done this. They said you're lucky if you can get it accomplished in 150 to 200,000. I'm not asking for that amount. I'm hoping that we can get someone locally here that can help us get this done. The other issue is that we have a sunset clause that is supposed to expire 2014, December of 2014. It's my understanding that we're also pushing parallel to have the legislature extend that sunset to 2016. My understanding is that it passed the House, and we're hoping that it will pass the Senate. But I'm assuming if it didn't pass the Senate, we have until December 2014 to accomplish this work. And I'm now in... we're almost entering March. So
Oliver, I was looking for a yes or no answer.
Well, that's what I'm looking for.
So you have received your stuff from Mr. Horenstein?
Yes, that's the application is in. Yes.
Oh, good.
You said there's two parcels?
Yes.
Yeah.
Are they both Legler?
Yep.
One is Ackland. I'm not sure what the Legler is leasing that from the property owner, but the two side it says Ackland and Legler properties.
Yeah, it's a dairy on the east side of 503, and then the pasture
on the west side.
So basically, this is to facilitate the development of that business land for jobs property.
If we are successful, yes.
Rail served.
Yes,
the west side.
Which would be a win for Clark County if every job counts. The $100,000. This is for a request for $100,000 additional fund for your department to do that, so you can consult. You can pay the. You said there's two different tasks that need to be done. One is the master plan, and that is by Mr. Hornstein. And the other is an environmental review, which isn't his expertise.
The commissioner, here's what's happened. The way that our code is structured, he's done what he's supposed to do. He submitted the application to us, and before he did that, he called me and said, oh, it's my understanding that I don't have to pay a fee because the county waives fee on development applications. And I said, if someone tells you that, well, submit your application, I'm going to accept it, and then I will talk to the commissioners to see whether this is something that will be done at no cost to you. The code says that when the application is submitted, it becomes a county-initiated action. So whatever needs to be done, the county will do that in order to process the application.
So to process the you got to say something?
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
This is, your fee waiver does cover commercial projects, but one of the things the board intended to exclude, at least one of the things you excluded, were amendments to the comprehensive plan because they were speculative.
Yes.
And this is one of those types of projects. I mean, to redo this project will require an amendment to the comp plan.
And that's primarily what it is. I mean, that's what we're doing.
Well, the fee waiver specifies exactly what code, what fees are to be waived and what fees are not to be waived.
Right.
So there's nothing in the resolution that we passed that authorizes these fees to be waived.
Correct.
So that would mean that the developer would pay.
He can only pay a fee for plan amendment and a zone change runs into, without that in front of me, close to $10,000. So if we can go back and ask him to pay us the application fee for the plan amendment and zone change, then you're looking at only $10,000. It's the least he can pay us. He may or may not.
Well, what I mean to say is, whether or not he has the capacity to pay, there's nothing in the fee waiver that authorizes the fees to be waived, correct?
And I told him that's my understanding. I don't know who he talked to. He said, Oliver, it's my understanding that I have to submit this application to you and no cost to me.
Well, that's where a prosecuting attorney can... has answered the question. There is no fee waiver for this application unless we do take some action to cause
it. So if you collect a fee, you'll only collect $10,000?
Yes.
So if you still need $90,000.
Well, I'll have to communicate that back to him that he has to, that his application is not fully complete until he pays the $10,000 for the application fee.
The fees don't cover our costs?
They wouldn't. It will cover staff, someone like my staff, Jose Alvarez, or whoever I assigned this to work with. It will cover his time on reviewing the application and taking it through the process, cover our legal fees for advertising and planning commission hearings, work sessions, things like that is what it will cover.
But it wouldn't cover an environmental review.
It wouldn't cover
an
environmental review or master plan.
And so that's the way we've always worked in the past, is that if someone brings property to us, they pay a fee, but we normally have a our own share that we pay for because there's a public good here or something.
This is totally different.
This one is different, Commissioner.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not the same as the same rezone or the same docket that you see At the end of the year. This is totally different.
Okay.
Because the statute requires that a master plan be done and the environmental review be done associated with this, unlike a site-specific application, plan amendment, zoning, rezoning 2 acres. You can do a SIP and issue a DNS, not for this type of application.
Okay, in other words, what you're saying is there is no provision to cover the staff costs necessary to process an application of this magnitude. It's going to cost us $90,000.
Right.
Well, we have no staff that would
that's qualified
the
to do
environmental review.
Okay.
So
I'm curious when it. Yes.
He said he's going to do it within the $100,000.
That's my best guess, that it could be done within that. You know, I've got to ask, you know, do an RFP, submit to me your qualifications. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't put out $100,000. Sure. They will come in, and I would. Some may come in at 80, 90. I'm not sure.
But that's
at this
what
point.
We're looking. We have restitution okay. for.
Yeah.
Okay, and I assume that you would include and notify the same environmental service provider that serves the Port of Vancouver, because they've got a wonderful provider. There's a very economical, very competent. I assume that they would be one of those that you would approach in the RFP. Or RFQ.
If I issue the RFP, I'm going to look at those that submitted or responded to it. I wouldn't necessarily go out and solicit or talk to one.
Well, I would encourage to make sure that provider is on your list.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
And we put together the plan holders list, so
yeah, okay. make that.
We can contact the port and get
okay.
that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then it sounds like it's a no-brainer. This is something we certainly. This is a very significant. Jobs, land, resource that could be a wonderful economic engine area for our county. And so if we're going to accept it and process it, then absolutely we need to fund it, right?
Yes.
So this isn't a traffic impact fee.
Right, got that.
No. This is above and beyond that, so that's something that we need to go back and recoup.
Yes, this has nothing to do with the fee waiver.
So what I will do is that I will contact Mr. Horenstein and tell him that his application is not technically fully complete. He has to pay us the fee, the annual review and rezon fee. Mm-hmm. And then
you can also tell him that the balance the county is picking up.
Yeah,
I will tell him that. Inducement to get him in.
I will tell him that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, we wouldn't reject it. We of course have to accept it. And do our part. That's just the way.
Right. So just to be clear, what we're doing today is we're telling Oliver that he can proceed with the work necessary to process this, and when the budget supplemental comes before the board, his request will be approved. For this money.
And the process will be to accept whatever response comes back to us, bids come back to us, then we will be looking at that with you and say, yep, we'll accept that bid. Like we do the acceptance of other bids, right? You're not just simply, saying execute it. We're saying go get your bids.
No, you have to approve it.
You have to approve it.
Yeah.
You have to approve
it. We will approve
contract.
It then.
Yeah, finally. Yeah. Yes,
great.
He will come back to you for your approval. Okay?
Okay.
Green light.
And then you'll work out with Horenstein the cost.
What he owes us, yes.
Yeah. What he owes us, yes.
Yeah. Not just the $10,000 like
no,
it'll just be the $10,000. That's it.
Because that's the way it's already predefined for years. There's nothing to do with the fee waivers.
This is different. That's
this
why
is different.
It's weird.
There's only been one of these ever done in the state, right?
Really?
Lewis County is the only one. That's
Lewis County.
Done.
To my knowledge, yeah.
Are we missing something here? Should we be considering anything else than doing it this way?
Now, this is the state's attempt to allow you to bring more industrial land into your county that's outside the urban growth boundary without going through your big annual up.
It's a good thing.
It's a good thing, but the state didn't do you any favors. When you read through the statute that Oliver's got there, the state didn't do us any favors in eliminating regulation or process. This thing has to be done airtight environmental study, and it's got to have the master plan. It's got to be all laid out just like a comp plan amendment would. So it's very expensive, and I don't think I ever saw anywhere where it really outlines this discussion that we're having about who pays, the county, the applicant, or whatever.
What happens is the applicant has the burden of proof. So if something's missing, it gets denied. The important thing with the Lagler property to keep in mind, I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm throwing water on the fire, but this property was the subject of the last growth management appeal, and the court held that the attempt to de-designate this as agriculture didn't have an adequate factual record, and therefore the court rejected it automatically and sent it back and made it agriculture again, we're going to have to still go through the process of showing why it doesn't qualify as agriculture. So the record that we put together when we get done at this has to really, the term Axel used about airtight is not too far off the mark. I mean, we really have to have everything lined up pretty well about how this is justified.
So most outcomes are foreseeable.
Right.
The question is, what's different this time that makes us so much more optimistic in spending $90,000 of taxpayer funds thinking we can get it through this time? What's different? Why would we win this time and not last?
I don't know the answer to that question, other than I think that this opportunity for Rural Industrial Bank is a newer program.
Last time it was just a standard comp plan, and so what this does is we are utilizing kind of a novel state statute. We're also going to look at this site with this money and through these studies in a very focused way, which hopefully would result in it being airtight in terms of, hey, we've done the due diligence on this site.
So what's different this time is that we have a new tool that's been provided to us by the state.
I may have misspoke. I apologize. This statute is not as new as I thought. It just hasn't been used.
It is very, very difficult.
And there's no guarantee that it will be a different result. Absolutely none.
That's right.
But it's something that the property owner wanted to do, so he had his lawyer submit the application.
Which is one more reason that we want the property owner to have some skin in the game. You pay your $10,000 because you're not just taking a risk and say, let the taxpayers cover it. He's making sure that he's going to do his homework, and he does not want to lose his $10,000 without getting something for it.
He doesn't change his mind this time.
That's true.
Okay. So, Oliver, you think we can... How optimistic are you that we can get this done successfully?
I am optimistic, but that depends on the level of us showing our work and doing it properly, airtight. and we can get folks that could help us get there. Lewis County was successful because, again, the property that they looked at was tied to a railroad and was used for some industrial activity. So they had a benefit there. So we have one of these property, I think our railroad crosses
right
through
there,
it.
Right?
So we got some good case we can make. Where we may have difficulty is in the de-designation of the property as ag and justifying that. So we got to do our diligent work to
make sure you get the right help.
To make sure that we got the analysis that needs to be done.
Okay.
And that, again, that if we are ever challenged, and I use the word challenged, that the property owners and Horenstein will be with us through the end.
Okay.
Because last time they didn't participate at all.
How many people are available to bid on something like this to do the work?
Commissioner, I don't know. Sometimes you get 5, 10.
You get that many.
You can get that many, good. Right? And they are local.
We'll make sure we
folks
get that other one.
You know, do the
work. Vancouver, the environmental. Yep. Okay. Great. Okay. I guess we got a green
go,
light.
Commissioner. Okay.
That's good.
All right.
Yes.
I would say thank you. I got to get back to Mr. Horenstein and have him to complete his application.
Okay.
But I'm good to go.
Okay. You still have the floor there, Mr.
Surface
Planner.
Mining overlay.
Yeah, I think what we're doing here is in a public setting, giving all of our guidance regarding the Planning Commission.
I felt that there was still a whole bunch that I didn't understand why the Planning Commission did some of the things they did. I was really concerned with the amount of aggregate sites that the state gave us that we've eliminated half of them. And so I was hoping to have a joint meeting work session with the Planning Commission to go and talk about each site, why they accepted it, why they didn't. So it'd be open to the public to attend.
Okay.
But it'd be a work session between us and the Planning Commission. That way we could talk to them about each site and why they decide to do certain things.
Well, Chris Horn has some... Are you doing work on this to make sure we understand what the state requirements and strict state criteria is?
Yes, Chris and I talked about...
Should we wait till you get your work done on that?
I think we would be done before any scheduled joint meeting that you would have with the PC.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So we can work on the two concurrently and make sure that we have it to you in plenty of time and them before that meeting would happen. Because my guess is it's going to take a little while to organize the schedules that you're going to want in place. And so yeah. I think we can make it work in plenty of time for you.
It works for me.
It works for me, too. I certainly want to be able to make progress on things. This is a very impactful to the people who live in the Livingston Mountain area, all of those roads that are accessed by the quarry trucks. So I want to make sure that as much solid, known state law, prosecuting attorneys, definition, all of that stuff is very clearly defined before we say, okay, come on in, we pack out hundreds of people in the hearing room for us to...
No testimony. It's a work session. Just between us.
Well, still, we want to make sure that it's going to be very helpful for all those people that have expressed a lot of interest in this.
And we were talking, when my conversation was, we want the DNR there, but not necessary to be at the table. We want them there to answer questions because they have some objections for them being cut out.
Yes, which is good. I'm just thinking, timing-wise, it would be... what's the smartest thing to do that would be the most beneficial both for us to figure out what's the right course on this, as well as all those individuals that will, all those citizens that are interested in this topic? Should we schedule it now, assuming that we're going to get all everything we need, all the communications done ahead of time, or we should wait till we discover what it is you put together and then schedule it?
Well, we've got to synchronize schedules and lock it in. And we're talking...
We'll wait for Chris, and then we'll look at scheduling. Chris is going to come back with...
It's up to you, Commissioner.
I would tell you
that my understanding was you may be looking at 6 to 8 weeks to get this scheduled.
Yeah, sure.
Yep. Okay.
But I'm saying that will give us plenty of time. So
okay.
You can schedule them together if you want. Yeah. You know what I mean? Schedule our work concurrent with... the notice of hearing for your joint meeting, mm-hmm. or you can wait, but we will not be your holdup, I don't believe.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think we could do it within a couple of hours. And the goal is to go back and review why we have some sites and not the others.
Mm-hmm. And which is the must.
I'm really concerned
because
the people at Livingston Mountain started off by saying, we don't want the mining done next to our house. Now they're saying, I don't want it done on any of the roads that we travel on the east side of the county. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work. Because if we start only having a half a dozen sites, the cost of aggregate is going to go through the roof.
Mm-hmm. So if I hear you correctly, you're thinking we should schedule the meeting because there's the planning commission and there's a
DNR
lot to make sure we get it on the schedule.
Right.
And that's going to be far enough in advance that we have plenty of opportunity for you to finish your work, for us to work with you so that we can become as knowledgeable as possible before we hit that meeting. Because I don't want this to be a time when we're beginning to do our homework. Mm-hmm. I want to be hit the ground as knowledgeable as you can equip us. So that would be a very productive communication.
They need a couple of years.
Okay, okay, so I'm good with scheduling the work session to make sure that you have enough time and we have enough time to digest what you put forth.
I believe that can be done. I think we can prepare you and we can get the material. I mean, some of this assumes that we have time to get together with you, and you'll have to make some time in your calendar.
I'll make
calendar.
Time.
No, we'll get
back to my schedule.
Okay. Well, with all that in mind, the answer is I believe we can do that.
And you might want to, if you have not done so, take a look at the transcript of the Planning Commission hearings where they talked specifically about the areas.
Can you send us a link?
I will make that available to you.
Oliver will send us the link.
Yeah, we'll make sure you get it.
Now, it's a binder. Yeah. Because it was four meetings, and each minute is like 90 pages, so I have four. I'll make you a binder with each of them.
But they're only interested. Homework.
Yeah, get ready, Anna.
Are they interested in all four of those, or are they just interested in the ones where areas were designated?
Well, there's also, these were all, are these the hearings themselves? Because they were recorded with CBTV. We can watch the CBTV instead of reading all this stuff.
That's we can ask.
And if there's some references that we need to be able to refer back to something in writing, we can just do that.
Well, I went to a lot of these meetings, and one thing that will be very beneficial for you to review is they talk about each site by number, and then before anything is removed by the Planning Commission, they deliberate and they have to talk about findings, and you know they have to talk about the reasoning. So, I mean, at those sections, if you key in on them, I think will give you a good indication about what the deliberation is.
Well, great. I would think that a very useful index as to all these hours and hours of videos, so that we know what marker to go to see these various numbers, because they cover the whole county, but the Livingston Mountain has 12, 13, and 14. I want to be able to zero in on those without having to scan and wonder where that's all at.
Okay. I can provide the minutes and highlights where those discussions were.
There's some stuff up here in northwest part that's been skipped over too.
Okay.
Yeah, the map that I brought has we numbered them. This is the one map,
right there.
And this one is the recommendation of the Rural Land Tax Force, and you can see their recommendation. And then the one at the back here is the recommendation of the Planning Commission.
Okay, so we want to be able to see the before and after very clearly on the GIS map, so that we can.
Yeah, if the board wants the Tax Force recommendation, I can provide you that map, and then
see the before and after.
Yeah, see the before and after, and we can also provide you the maps, the geological study that came to us from DNR in 2005.
Sure. That's also whatever you can equip us with.
Okay.
So the one that you talked about, just the DNR study, or the DNR that did it for
the geological inventory that was done, that's available as well. The one that shows you where the aggregate resources are, the potential they have.
Well, we don't want to go back and the ones that they've already scratched off where people are living there.
Oh, okay.
We don't want to see that.
Okay, good.
We're going to take them off. So these two maps, I think,
work. These two maps will do. The other thing that we may put a draft together for the board to consider is monitoring and enforcement of county conditions of approval. I think that's really key, and I think that will make some of the property owners happy that the board consider that.
And it's a conditional use thing.
There's really two things.
Okay.
There's A, which is what's on the map and what's the criteria for those green spots being on the map.
Right.
And that by itself is a pretty big challenge. And if we stay focused on that for this work session, I think we'll be very productive, because that by itself is supercharged.
Good point.
B is what are we going to do for code enforcement and conditions of approval and all of those things when it comes to the permitting. I think we better save that B for another work session another time.
That's okay. I will do that.
Good point.
You know, that's a good observation. I'm just thinking that for the fact that you're going into a joint work session with the PC, that's one component you can also consider. But if you want to do that at a separate work session or a separate meeting, we will certainly honor that.
We'll tackle the hard one first.
Okay.
We have something that we're talking about. Everyone is unique within itself, and some will require a lot of conditional use, and some might require hardly none. Do we have a list of things to be considered? Do we have a list of those?
Yeah, our current code now says, for example, that mining extraction is a permitted use outright. There is no, you don't have to go through conditional use permit to do the extraction. But when you are crushing and doing all that processing, that you do through conditional use permit. Some of the producers want to do that on site, so they apply for that simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there is a list of uses that are permitted outright and those that you go through conditional use permit. Often what I have seen is that they combine both applications together and you process it as one.
We've learned so much from the Yakult. The things that we do is just a good thing to have a check off list to take a look and see what might pertain to each one.
One of the issues that we've had in designating the areas is that state law gives us a whole bunch of criteria, and we've worked with those. And then there are some provisions in our comprehensive plan as well. Unfortunately, those are very, very elderly provisions, and they're kind of a mishmash that mixes designating land for the overlay and permitting standards. Yeah. And we have been anxious to move permitting standards to their very own place somewhere else.
Separate.
Right.
And have our own designation standards that comply with state law rather than this thing that's now called the matrix. So that's one of the reasons why we did address some of the other issues in the course of doing this designation.
Yes, but it sounds like you're suggesting that we separate these out.
Absolutely. Right.
So we can continue to talk about the different conditional use and all the requirements that needs to happen in order to get extraction and transportation and crushing and all that stuff later.
Okay.
And just focus on separating it out and just do that A first.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about B after we get through A.
Sure.
Sounds good.
Makes sense.
Okay. Good plan. So you'll get with Rebecca and schedule that. And
sure.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Memorial.
The next item, if you recall, Commissioners, Commissioner Stewart brought this up a number of weeks ago and asked that staff work with the sheriff and Public Works. And so, Holly, do you have the latest on Souter?
Thanks, Chris.
I have as much as I have.
Sorry. He thought he was getting out of here.
You know, he still hasn't had
one. Okay, go ahead, Holly.
So I went to speak to the sheriff about it. He's all for it. I got the story of how Deputy Souter was killed. It just happens that he was killed across the street from what's now the 78th Street Ops Center. The sheriff, of course, had no objection to one of his former deputies being honored in this way. He wanted to make sure Public Works was okay with it because it's a Public Works building, not a sheriff's building. I spoke then to Heath about it. Heath said he talked to Sue Steppen out at the Ops Center, but he also suggested that Public Works is going to be building two parks this year. And so Heath is working with the sheriff to determine where either Tim Souter, the Souter's the son, now lives, or Deputy Souter lived at the time of his death, to determine whether one of the two parks that would be coming online would be a neighborhood park associated directly with the Souter family. He's also suggested to the sheriff that the Camp Bonneville shooting range could be an option, or some type of sheriff's facility, or something related to Deputy Souter's interests, and I don't know any of those. So at the moment, Heath is communicating, waiting to get a little more feedback from the sheriff. But I know the date of his death, so Heath actually said that one of the two parks would be coming online right about the time of the 38th anniversary of Deputy Souter's death. So if it fits in geographically, that might be a good way to deal with it. Plus, it would put him on par with the Brad Crawford park.
Yeah, because Brad Crawford was killed in the line of duty, and we named a park after him.
Mm-hmm.
And so this would follow the same pattern.
Neighborhood, yeah.
Yeah, but we're going to take into account the desires of the family and you know, what the sheriff thinks is appropriate.
Yeah. And so one of the things that we're trying to do is get the sheriff to take a larger part in this.
The
to take the lead in, and then we would be the supporting.
That's one reason he reached out to the sheriff, because you know, the operations center, you know, the public works folks don't have any objections, but you know, if the shooting range at Camp Bonneville is a really good idea, although it's not a public thing, it's kind of remote. Mm-hmm.
So I would think that the sheriff is kind of like their family, and they would work with family, and we would let them take the lead and give and say, what do you want? And Heath and all of our staff here would say, we're here to accommodate whatever you want. You let us know.
Yep. Yep. I like it.
Yeah, we're just providing a little energy to the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, little ideas.
Yeah. Good. Okay. All right, Heritage Farm, we had a proposal to create a tailgate farmer's market on the east side of the property.
Yeah, Joe. Joe's farmer.
Yeah, I went to Heath Henderson. He asked if he needed to be here to explain his cost estimates. I said no, but once I get beat up, maybe we'll bring him up here.
Give his objection.
So this
is going to give it to us in writing.
So he gave us two estimates here. One at the top called gravel, and the one below called porous.
Gravel.
Yeah, gravel's cheaper, obviously, but to make the intersection improvements, to put in a new gate, to create a driveway, to grade and compact and gravel, the estimate's $356,000. To do porous pavement would be $617,000. And there could be complications associated with this, like
with porous.
Pardon?
You mean complications of porous? Complicated the whole thing?
No, either approach might trigger a stormwater improvement requirement. They haven't yet determined whether or not that would be required. But any stormwater facility that would have to be built to catch the runoff off of the newly compacted soils or the new pavement would have to be constructed, which would only increase the cost.
We got a new designation for gravel roadways now, but they are recognized as being somewhat porous.
Somewhat. So we might
somewhat
cut them.
Good.
So this is on the Heritage Farm.
Right. On the east side at 25th and 78th.
Yep. So what kind of funding would be available for this?
Well, the farm is a general funded activity. So my answer is none. There are no resources identified to improve that property. I know we got a grant to build a parking lot on the west side. Clean Water got a $400,000 grant to build a demonstration parking lot using low impact development techniques.
So why wouldn't we repurpose that to be this?
Because the granting agency would say, I'm sorry, we really liked your demonstration low-impact development project. We are not going to give you money to compact ground and put gravel down for a farmer's market.
Well, no, what I'm saying is, I'm just thinking the location. Instead of doing this thing on the west side of that, where it was originally, it doesn't help this at all, you do that project over here, so it does help this.
We'd have to resubmit the grant.
The grant was given to the east side.
The bulk of the activity on the site occurs on the west side. That's where the Harvest Fun Day is. That's where all the classes are taught. That's where the activity occurs. And so,
is there any possibility we can get some kind of grant for this, or we could wait to get a grant for this, or Parks could apply? Could this be from Parks or something? Yes, it's a farm.
Yeah, certainly we could look at submitting grant applications to various funding agencies to fund something like this. I don't know how prominently farmers markets figure in the grant world.
Well, it's Heritage Farm. It's one of the improvements and amenities to make Heritage Farm a much more community involved involvement resource.
And this is not consistent with the approved master plan either.
Well,
so I don't know what the implications are there.
You have to see significant differences.
Yeah, I mean, we had a very extensive community involvement process when we developed the master plan for that site. Admittedly, it's a conceptual master plan, which means that, you know, you have some flexibility, but a significant change to the property like this would necessarily involve an outreach effort, which would
be good.
Oh yeah, yeah, outreach is always good.
So I would think that you would not want to do this without amending the master plan to incorporate it, right?
Right. We have a farmer's market, and I'll get to the master plan if you want to see it. The farmer's market was intended to be centrally located on the site, not to the to the east end. The east end we envisioned would eventually, at some point, house some sort of facility, maybe in conjunction with Clark College or some other educational institution, to create some sort of institute for agriculture, where we could actually have students that would matriculate. They'd have a farm right there. They could learn how to operate farming equipment, you know, cultivation techniques, and so on. But I'm flexible.
So I think probably moving ahead with this is that we partially look for a grant that we might qualify for.
Okay.
And at the same time, review the master plan for the site.
Yeah. We could do those two things together.
Because I'm not sure if WSU classrooms would go there.
Well, not necessarily WSU, just... We had hoped that there would be an Institute of Agriculture or something on the site.
Because that was the original intent.
Well, I'm curious. This grant that we got, $400,000 for the parking lot on the west side of the property, one of the disadvantages of that is that the traffic control needs to happen manually every time because there's no signal there.
There's a center turn lane?
Well, if you're going to have a lot of people... compared to the traffic signal that's already there on the east side of the property.
The only time we have a massive amount of people on that site is the Harvest Fund Day, and we cone the roads, and we have traffic control personnel in the roads.
Right, to and make that sure pushes overhead.
To make sure things are safe for that one event.
Right, and I'm thinking...
But a farmer's market would be a relatively low traffic event.
You think so?
I think so.
It wouldn't require that traffic control? Because that's what their concern was. They hope to have lots of customers, and that.
Well, I know they would hope that. I don't know. I think we'd have to play it by ear. My idea would be, and I've said this before, tell this fellow Bob that he is free to have a farmer's market. Pardon, Joe. Oh, I'm sorry. I was thinking of Budget Bob or something.
the guy telling you got no money.
The guy telling me we can't fund this. Is run a pilot on the west side. Bring in eight trucks, pickups, have your produce in the back, put a little tent over the top in case it rains, put a sign up saying Farmer's Market, and see who comes.
Actually, that's a good idea. When is that project supposed to be done, the $400,000 project?
Oh, I don't know. I'd hate to say it because I'd probably be wrong, but I believe it's going to construction. It's already designed.
This year?
I thought it was going to go to construction this year, but I'd have to double check with Mr. Waringa.
I like your idea. In the meantime, we can apply for grants for this, and that would help a great deal. So we can do
or amend the plan, you know, and then maybe it ends up being a split down the road where you got some general fund, some road fund, some state grant, some capital. You know, we just put a capital grant in for the irrigation system out there, or next year we can put a capital grant in for this, but. It's been my experience. You want to do this. I'm not saying this isn't right, but you want to do it. You're only going to do it once. You want to do it right.
Yeah.
If you go to Bellingham's, I love that one. Right downtown, it's got the things you pull up, and you know. But you want to do it according to your plan.
I think we just need to work on the access to it first, and the safest access, if we go that large down the road, would be to have the access at the traffic light.
In the meantime, can't they set up shop like Mark said? I mean, you know, the one in Calitz is just at the fairgrounds. People just pull in and throw all their stuff out, throw their tents up, and everybody shows up.
Why aren't we using any road fund for this? We're actually putting in extending to the east of a traffic signal.
Because the road fund operates off of an annual construction plan and a traffic improvement program that is briefed to the board and approved. He would have to amend his plans.
I see.
And that's part of the problem with the road fund and public works is, you know, today they're yanked this direction, tomorrow they're yanked this direction.
I know you've got change.
Okay, well, for direction then, you're suggesting that since the development on the west side is already going to happen, that we communicate with Joe and let him, that's going to be available for farmers market. As a pilot, in the meantime, we do what we can to get grants signed up for this.
Yep.
So we could have DES as well as parks look for grants, right?
Public Works.
Parks, I think, can only get grants for parks.
Park.
Well, it's park-like, but it's not. It's not part of the official park inventory.
We're going to be parking.
And
well, we put the irrigation grant in the capital grant, so we know the mechanism to ask the state for money.
Right.
At least one mechanism.
Yeah, and when it hits the ground, it makes a loud clunking sound because we've never
well,
gotten anything.
One of these guys stick to the wall, you know.
Well, being that the stewardship of the Heritage Farm is all under the domain of DES.
No. No, that's mine as Director of General Services.
Oh, okay. There. Oh, well, good. Then General Services.
So you're talking to the right guy.
Good. Okay.
I'm the one that did the master plan.
No wonder he's squirming.
Yeah.
So you can hunt for grants for that one.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Okay.
And we can tell.
We good?
We can tell.
I think we should feel that spread out looking, not just. There, I mean, DEF to look, and I don't know.
We can even go to nonprofits like the Pew Charitable Trust or to the who's that? Bill Gates Foundation or whatever, because the Heritage Farm has benefited. What are you laughing at?
Yeah.
Nothing.
The Heritage Farm has benefited the food bank every year for the last 6 years. Mm-hmm. We've produced 150,000 pounds of produce that we donate, and we've got all kinds of good programs on the
like
site.
Carrots.
Beets, potatoes.
This would be a really neat thing for the community to rally behind, and perhaps there could be the organization or organizations that can come together and champion this. So we'd be looking for a champion. Hey, community, who cares about Heritage Farm and
put the word out.
Farmers Market going in there.
So, I was laughing because you were going to assign him to write a grant, which I told Holly that's going to trickle.
Yeah, it flows downhill.
That's going to trickle down.
It flows downhill.
Irrigation system.
And you happen to notice they're sitting in the right order.
You're on the wrong side.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
I put the editor to write.
Earlier today, I asked him to polish up a memo from Oliver, and he passed it to Holly. So
we just double checking.
That's why I call him senior planner.
Yeah. Okay. Enough said on this?
Yeah. So you got direction on that, right?
Okay. I'll go to the grid and listen
like
to the recording. If I
use a casting rod and hit all the departments and the grant writers. And
yeah,
see what they might know something we don't know.
No, I'll levy each department a fee. Okay, this last one. 2 weeks ago, we talked about the Center for Community Health incident, and I mentioned at that time that Bill Wright had commented that best first responder is an armed person right there on the site, and I mentioned the policy that the county had about prohibiting concealed carry by employees, and there was a bit of surprise on the part of the board. And so last week I gave you excerpts from the workplace violence policy that talked specifically about prohibiting concealed carry in the workplace, and my sense is that the board has guidance for staff on that policy.
So tell me how that worked out for the post office.
And so we're ready to receive your guidance if you have any for us.
Okay.
I would like to look at drafting a legalization of concealed carry.
Are you done?
I know without that, I think that we hold some liability of assuming that we're in a safe workplace all the time. So I don't see a problem with it. I mean, you know, like it was brought up, said, gee, we didn't know there was a policy. The same thing in Olympia at the ledge. Half the legislators up there probably have concealed weapons. And up there was like a do not ask, do not tell type thing, and that was never brought up. But I think that you could put a sign out front and this is not a no weapons area.
Yeah, if you think we're easy pickings, think again.
Beware of weapons.
Yes.
So I just want to say, context wise, I think it's always bad policy for us to react and make new policy based on a tragedy or an event that
reaction.
Unfolded.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not doing that. That was enough history has gone by between now and then. I think it was appropriate that we did take inventory, we did examine our policies, we've had time to think about it. The safety team was over there, and you've been in good communication, and now it's appropriate for us to be able to look at addressing a better solution than what we have now. I don't think any of us were aware that that policy, I don't know how long it's been on the books, has existed that said staff can't carry, there's no weapons in this building. And yet we don't address any the public. The public is free to come in here with weapons, and yet, so that's a very bad situation. So the
bad public.
It's a bad policy because it basically says, you know, we're easy, quick pickings here, have at it. Mm-hmm. It would be, so certainly the change in the policy is appropriate to remove the prohibitions for firearms for staff here. They have the right to defend themselves and to defend others. I would think the process on that would be fairly straightforward. Chris, okay. And you can bring that forward for next.
Yeah, I can work on it. The current policy, staff is kind of a broad term because the policy doesn't use that term. It uses employees. So I'm not sure if you like the distinction, but
no,
the difference
don't
is
care.
That it doesn't apply to you. But more importantly, you need to understand that there are a number of places where firearms are specifically not allowed. Courthouse. We don't allow them in a juvenile facility. So there are some locate the sheriff's department does not as a no firearms location. So if you're going to change the policy, we'll look at it in connection with the county buildings. Some of them, for obvious reasons, due to the risk. We've had judges who've been threatened and actually had firearms pulled on them. There are some real reasons why you might distinguish point A from point B. And so we'd like the flexibility of addressing those individual circumstances. The state law contemplates that they be treated differently than you might the PSC.
Yes, and I'm not assuming that we would make this into a big comprehensive kind of a plan. We have already an existing policy that defined that says it's prohibited.
Correct.
And there's just a few sentences there, and I would assume that if we just delete those sentences from what's already standing, it doesn't impact any of those things you just listed. It would just it make a very simple fix here.
I can make it narrow, or I'll go through it and then I'll make changes. How about if I propose those and bring them back to you for next week?
Sure. So, and keep it simple so that we don't let this thing blow up into a very complicated process that impacts the courts and the judges and those kind of things. You can always refine and take additional steps in the future, but the sooner we can address the basic problem here that needs to be fixed, the better.
So the current policy we have now, it just addresses county employees?
Yes.
It doesn't address specific buildings?
Well, there's state laws that say, I don't have it with me,
there's a code section on weapons.
Yeah.
And I guess where I was going with that is that, Commissioner Madore said, is that it's just a matter of eliminating that portion that prohibits.
Yeah.
Because you're at quite a disadvantage if all employees are prohibited, but all visitors can have concealed carry.
Well, I just need to pal around with one of you guys in.
Concealed?
I'm not worried about the concealed carry. It's the guy that is illegally carrying. Right. That's what you're worried about.
Right. Anna, did you want to say anything on this? You studied it as well.
That was dropped off. That's part of county code.
Right.
And the reason I brought that to your attention is because Christian said something. He said you guys are not. Doesn't apply to you guys.
Elected officials are exempt.
It says elected officials are exempt.
Well,
in our own county code.
Okay. But here's the thing.
Just as
this is not about us.
I understand. You want to go beyond
this. This is about the employees of the county.
Sure.
Good point.
No, I understand, and I got the impression. That's why I said it was my opening comment. Our policy does not apply. There's an exemption for judges and you specifically, mm-hmm. or elected officials specifically. But you want? I got a clear message from you that you wanted to go beyond that, and I will write
clear message.
I'm sorry.
You got my clear message.
I did.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will be back next week.
Thank you, Chris.
All right.
With something ready to adopt. And I assume that because this is not an ordinance or resolution, this is just internal county policy, that this is the proper setting for us to be able to
get
it done, right?
Well, if it requires any amendments to the code, we will have to go to public hearing. If it's just the county's policy, we can do it next Wednesday.
Yeah, we're not touching code, right?
Well, some of it is in Title IX, but I'll make sure that they're consistent.
Okay.
So if there's an issue, we'll let you know.
Okay, now I would assume that if there is something that needs to be done where we do modify the code, that you would then take it in two steps. The first one would be get done what you can get done just
right.
To do with policy, and if there needs to be a follow-up with the code, we do that as a second step.
Yes, sir.
Great.
Okay.
Moving right along, Commissioner reports.
Hey, you want to go first or you want
to? I don't have anything. Chair never goes first. I stay back.
I have something.
Okay.
Anna has worked very closely with this citizen, and so I asked. She's more knowledgeable than I have because she's talked firsthand, knowing what the situation is. Let me just summarize first what the scoop is. The county routinely has an auction for properties, and
thanks.
Hey, Chris, we're talking about sale of surplus properties, and
it'll be brief, hopefully.
And what the rights of citizens are, and et cetera.
Here's what happened: we discovered a couple of months ago that the county sold some property that some staff here knew obviously that it was not buildable. And we did not reveal that to the public, even though we knew it. So we didn't want that to happen again. And so I thought that at that point that we would have solved that problem by now. We haven't. The problem is, it happened again. Someone else bought a piece of property that has a history of being sold by the county, not being buildable, and that the citizen lost the property because he found out after the fact. We put it right out, did it right again. Somebody else bought it, and in the same pickle again. So there's two things that I would like to be able to do to fix this. One is on this recent sale, which just happened February 5th,
sure.
To direct staff to reverse that because that should not have happened.
Can I flesh that out a little bit?
Yes.
Okay. So Melissa Jesperson called and she was in tears and she bought a parcel on the foreclosure sale and she paid $28,600 for it. The assessor currently has the parcel valued at $109,000, and I spoke to the assessor, and he's looking into that particular part of it. Sometime between the 6th and the 12th, Ms. Jefferson was told it was not a buildable lot. On February 12th, she spoke to Trudy and asked to be able to get out of the sale, and Trudy said, no, the deeds are already done. Melissa contacted a real estate attorney but decided to try to find a remedy with the county before she went that route. She was able to find out that the parcel had been sold before under the same circumstances that she found herself in. The previous owner sought a septic permit from the County Health Department in 2000, which was not approved, and was rendered not buildable, and you can find that in their records. The previous owner attempted to sell it for several years unsuccessfully, so he finally just stopped paying taxes, and it was foreclosed on again. And that's how it ended up back on our online sale. Vicki Kirshner in our planning department said in her email to our constituent, the decision rendered in 1998 is attached, which recognized the 2.89 acre parcel you purchased as a legal lot of record. The county treasurer in my discussion with him, with Doug, tells me that they advertised the parcels in the newspaper the prior year to the online auction. He also says they have a list of it on their websites that are coming up for sale. And I asked him if there was a policy in his department of how long they would have the properties on the website prior to it going up on auction.
not a long time, is it?
Well, he
actually,
said,
Anna, if I'd like people to focus on two different things first and do the first one first.
Okay.
Because the first one is just a simple decision to reverse this sale.
And I'd also like to say that several months ago this subject came up and there was a lot of discussion about it. Mark had a lot of discussion about it with the a family called the Shadles, and they basically had an almost identical situation. They wrote a letter to the county asking for help, and it's been an ongoing discussion for months.
Okay.
And then this came up.
Right, and this is unique in that we had already discovered that this had happened.
Yes.
And we had already communicated to our citizens that we're working on this, it shouldn't happen again because we're on it. We didn't get it done, and it happened again. That's this window of time that makes this property unique. Mm-hmm. Only a couple weeks ago this happened. Mm-hmm. So, Chris, I assume that if Tom and I agree on this, to reverse this decision, there's simply two votes today, we can reverse this particular sale and this gal can get her money back.
Actually, you can't, but let me explain a little bit. This is not just surplus property. If it was, it would be easy for us to reverse this sale. This is property that's sold by state, according to the requirements of state law, that orders the treasurer to collect proceeds of money for school districts and ports and all kinds of junior taxing districts. And when people don't pay their taxes, what happens is he takes what they give him. I mean, he doesn't get to pick. If there are two tax parcels that make up a legal lot and somebody for whatever reason decides to get two tax and get their property tax segregated, he does that because he's required to, and then they don't pay taxes on one half because maybe it's in a wetland. That property goes after 3 years for tax foreclosure. It's ordered by state law, and he has to sell it to get what money he can for the junior taxing districts. Mm-hmm. He's just following the law, so you don't really have the authority to reverse that sale because the law ordered him to do it, and he was doing what the state law requires. Now, if the board chose to, you could buy it from that property owner and as in settlement of some, if we're concerned that there may be litigation against the county, mm-hmm. and we want to settle a potential claim against us and then put it up for sale as surplus property or do something else with
it.
With proper disclosure, as you know, we're amending the disclosure forms, mm-hmm. but this is a situation that happens in counties throughout the state, and as she noted, she paid 25 cents on the dollar for this piece of land, and people usually buy it who are adjacent to it, so they can boundary line adjust it. So even if it's illegal, you can just adjust it to your property line.
Sure, I got that. And what I don't want to do is focus on the wrong problem. We are not focusing on improving our disclosure form or wording. We're not trying, what we're just simply trying to do, in this case, there is potential litigation. This is an injustice, and she's talking about there is risk here, and rightfully so. So the reverse of the sale is equivalently a buyback from this owner.
Well, it just depends where the money's coming from. We can't take it from the treasurer. We have to take it from the general fund and pay her, and then we'll do an independent purchase.
Well, the treasurer's money goes into somewhere. Where does it go?
It goes to the taxing district.
Yeah.
So
and we're the largest taxing district for that.
A fraction of it.
No, the school district is the mm-hmm. biggest. And then state funds is a district that gets paid.
Let me think of another solution. Would it be easier to make this a legal lot?
Well, and that's an option. If the parcel complies with zoning, there is an option, and I mentioned this.
That's the wrong problem.
It
is a legal lot. The problem is that our health department, it was known that this lot does not perk. You can't build on it because you don't have a place for your drain field.
In the year 2000,
it was not approved for a septic permit.
I understand. I will tell you that that's not a guarantee necessarily. Because of what I do for land use, I've seen CalEC perk just about anything, number one. But number two, the standards for what kinds of septic systems are out there has changed dramatically in the last 4 years based on some of the systems that aerate. But independently, the question that you want to answer or you need to have answered is whether or not we could recognize it in the public's interest under 5817.210. And if it complies with zoning, the answer is
it does.
There's a very real possibility that we could, in which case this property becomes much more valuable for the property owner. Because now that if you can put a house on it, it's not worth $29,000. It may be worth $129,000.
Which is going to spend a lot of money in the special septic system.
So the only $20,000 available is a failure to perk for septic.
There's a Clark County code that I looked up, and it gives three exceptions. One is innocent purchaser exception. The other is the public interest exception that you just mentioned, and the other is the. Well, there's one that's mandatory and the other one is discretionary.
Right.
So the public interest exception is...
Either that or she can apply either as an innocent purchaser, but the most likely one is it would be a public interest under 4520, like 020.
Exactly.
Well, you said we have to have a public hearing? And
it doesn't have to have a public hearing. It's a staff administrative application.
At one point it wouldn't perk, and now we're talking about...
What's the second issue? The fact that land won't perk doesn't make it illegal.
Right.
The thing that makes it illegal is because it's been illegally divided.
Right.
This property is illegal because it's been divided into two pieces without going through plat approval.
So we can resolve
that in the public's interest if we choose to.
And she owns both of them?
Independently, there's a septic problem. And what happens is...
We're getting our two people mixed up here.
Oh, yeah.
What?
We're getting our two cases overlapped.
What? Or which?
The Shadles had an illegal zoning problem.
But if this one,
they were told just in the last 2 days by community development, it is a legal lot. It is not a buildable lot because it's septic.
Because of septic.
Yes. So there's only one problem. It's a septic.
Yes.
13-year-old
on that one.
Decision by public health.
Yes.
It was known.
Now, this information is all coming from Melissa Jesperson because we haven't had time to have talks with the people that are providing her with that information.
Right. So public health may tell her now that there are septic systems that will work on that property.
Well, she just called them a couple of days ago, several days ago, and they told her... They gave her history.
Yeah.
They gave her, in 2000, there was a septic not approved, and it's in their void file now.
Right. What happens is the health department, when you apply, or used to be the health district, when you apply, a fee that you pay for tests is good for two sets of holes. So you designate on your property, you go out, and hopefully you hire somebody to help you. But a property owner can go out, mark two sets of holes, and they check them. They check for how well they percolate. They look for modeling in the soil and a whole bunch of things, roots and all kinds of stuff. The point is, you pick that one. If it fails, you pick another one. If it fails, the application's deemed failed, and you can apply for a winter over, or you can start over again. I'm just saying that having dealt with Mike Aiken and Tiger Lily, he spent $200,000, but he got every one of his lots to perk because he spent the time doing it. So the fact that they fail one time is not necessarily a guarantee that they're always going to fail. And the other issue is I can't remember the new system that's out, but basically
it's
what it does...
oxygenated, it pumps up.
Exactly. What it has is it actually is a self-contained unit, and rather than have... sand filters or sand mounds, what it actually does is water is bubbled and it helps aerate, the aeration helps break down the bacteria, and then in addition to that it's flowed over ultraviolet lights to kill the bacteria. So that technology allows for percolation under circumstances where prior technologies wouldn't have approved it because the land was too close to groundwater. So you just need to check. I can't say whether it worked or not.
Okay, so there's two potential remedies for this particular citizen, this innocent purchaser.
Lots are legal, she doesn't even have that issue. She's in compliance with platting and zoning, according to
what she is. Anna said. And that's not the issue here. I think we want to make sure we use the right terminology.
Okay.
In this case, the bottom line is she couldn't build it because of some because our public health department had this knowledge that it was rejected, it wouldn't perk, and didn't find out, and that was not revealed to the buyer, although we could have and we should have, and going forward that's the kind of thing we should. But that leaves us with two choices at this point. One is to somehow encourage, support this citizen so that she can get her lot perked and she can build her original plans. That would be one thing, and hopefully that would be a good thing for her. And the other choice would be somehow for us to be able to say, okay, one way or another, there's your money back.
Well, okay, the one way or another we can talk about otherwise. You have to be careful that you can't attribute to the treasurer who's selling land under these circumstances knowledge of every person who works for the county.
I got that. And, okay. and here's where I'm not going. I'm not saying that we need to do a thorough check on everything, do a legal lot determination and everything, invest all that, and guarantee it's going to be buildable. Absolutely, we're not saying that. Okay. What I am saying is that if we know, if one of our departments obviously knows that for some reason a lot is not legal, it's not buildable, if that's known, we need to reveal that as part of the information that's disclosed when we sell that lot. And there's a few steps we can take to make sure that happens, and that is, okay, treasurer, check with public health. And there it is, the record is really easy to find. Check with development, community development, whatever the easy known information is. If it's really obvious, just disclose it. We're not investing a whole lot of time, and we're not guaranteeing it's going to be workable. But what we are saying is that if we know something, we're not going to hide it, or we're not going to just simply play ignorant.
Well,
I've dealt with a lot of I get a lot of these calls, not typically on foreclosures, but on just general public people who want help because they bought something that isn't what they thought it was or what it was represented from an individual. And I've worked with Chris on a number of these too. And I don't disagree. I mean, I think maybe on some of these foreclosures, because we probably don't have a million of them, there's maybe something process-wise, but I got red flags going up because I've worked on a lot of these, and this is a big precedent if we do, because this is a buyer beware state, right? So I'm not saying that's
it's still buyer beware.
Maybe that's not a good policy, but it's the policy that we operate under, and so the thing sold for $25,000.
Something wrong with it.
So a lot of other people didn't bid on it because they may have made that phone call to the health department, which. I didn't.
She made it after the fact.
Right. So, I mean, before I'm throwing $25,000 down in cash or whatever, that's basically what you have to have for one of these sales. That phone call is something
that's
that the
true,
state
Axel,
expects.
And you come from that perspective from years of knowing.
Right. No,
and
I understand
that. And a lot of our
that.
Citizens have no idea.
Well, and I get that, but I'm just saying if we fix this one, and I'm not saying we shouldn't, I'm just saying we've got to think about the precedent it sets for the next one or the previous ones, because I've dealt with a lot of these where...
Yeah. Trickle becomes a flood.
From the state's perspective, they expect the buyer to do the work. That's all I'm saying.
Right, and here is what we do not want to do. We don't want to escalate this up and include anything other than our auctions and just simply including the information that we already know. That's all, and to keep it really simple.
How many
make a few checks.
We're only talking seven properties.
Yeah, how many do we do?
No, we auction. It depends on the year.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you may auction 25 or 30.
But you have to wait how many years before you...
3 years.
Okay, so we've got 3 years.
Well, yeah. They don't check at the time they first start going into deficiency. You may have thousands that are 1 year out.
Yeah, and then
you
they pay
up. You may have 500 that are 2 years out.
It shrinks as you get to the three-year
exactly.
point.
Because Doug tries to work with people to help them pay enough right. of their taxes so they stay out of foreclosure. But it's a lot. It's not necessarily as easy as it sounds just to call, because the tax parcels change. It depending on how all this plays out. I don't want to make it sound like it's more complicated than it is, but it can be. If a property owner does a tax segregation, depending on when they do it, a septic system approval will be skewed. For example, you think that the septic, well, in any event, all I can say is it's a little more complicated than you might think.
I know it can be complicated.
Okay.
But this is just simply a policy that says yes, the buyer beware disclaimer is there up front. We're not changing that. But we're also saying we're not that we're taking one more step to do what we can to make some of the easy checks. Checked and see, is there something known that this isn't going to perk? Well, we reveal that. Okay. If it's known to be an illegal lot, yeah, then we say that. So that just simply says we're going to, and we're not, and there's still no guarantee. So we're not making ourselves liable saying this is what we're going to do, but it makes us helpful.
So in each case that I've worked with here, the constituent has paid the money, the Shadles cleared the land, paid an additional $8,000 to buy an easement, and when they walked into the county for their first permit, within a very short period of time, the staff said, I'm sorry, you have an illegal lot, or you have a non-buildable lot. So
it was easy then.
It was easy then.
Short amount of time being
and
20
then,
minutes?
Within a day or two. And that's when they, oh my goodness, you know. Well, yeah, and the argument is always there. And I talked to Doug, and he, since we've gone into that part two, he is very concerned about this, and he is looking really strongly at making the information stronger on the web page that says
the disclaimer portion.
Well, not necessarily disclaimer, but just saying, you know, do your research, do your due diligence, yeah, that kind of thing. Make it a little bit more bells, yeah, and whistles for the innocent purchasers. But again, a lot of these people out there don't know what we know, and so their heads don't go there. Here's where the heads go. I never would have envisioned or imagined the county would ever sell me anything that was unusable, unbuildable, and basically worthless to me.
So, Anna, this is where I see it. Because we are a county, we seem to have exempted ourselves from some of the disclosure laws as a private individual, that I'm bound by law to disclose.
Well, we said there are no warranties. There's no guarantees.
But we knew something about this piece of property before.
Well, the county does. The treasurer doesn't.
Well,
I mean,
yeah, the
health department may. And
yeah,
some
so
of it may be in title records.
Run through the checklist.
Okay, well, you've got an independently elected official, so I can request that he do it. I can't tell him to do anything.
Well, I think we respect the independent, the autonomy, the freedom for these independently elected officials to run run the department the way they want. But we also, as commissioners, set policy that impacts our citizens. And the way I see this, this is policy that impacts our citizens. Our treasurer, I think, would be very supportive. He doesn't want to rip off citizens. He doesn't want to have them. Buyer beware when dig it to them. He wants to be helpful. And so if we just simply say, here's a simple checklist, and when you go through, include that, so that we do ask these various departments to highlight something that you may know about and reveal that.
And what happens,
we help him.
What happens if the treasurer just were to notify people, contact the building department, contact the planning department, and tell the individual bidders to contact them before they bid on the property and put the onus on them, since they're the ones that stand to make money. I mean, people buy this land as a speculative venture. They're buying it for investment. If they're not a neighbor, they're buying it for investment purposes or hoping that they can get property on the cheap. Mm-hmm. They know they're not buying it from a real estate broker. And so to put the onus on them to do that, we'll tell them. You know, you should check the health department. We could tell them all the people. We could even give them all the numbers. But put the onus on the people who stand to make the money rather than make the treasurer use staff to do it.
I'd be supportive of that. If there's enough, if we provide that means and say, here's your checklist, here's the way how to do it, and here's enough time to be able to do it.
Sure.
Right now this was listed for one day. So we want to make sure.
Well, I'd be surprised. I think it was listed for more than a day.
No, the auction is open and closed in one day.
Okay.
But the properties are out there listed all kinds of places in the newspaper and
for weeks.
But and there are absolutely a category of people that just, they're looking for a good deal. Those are smart investors. They know what they're doing. This is not that category. This is the category of somebody that actually wanted to build a house on it, both of them.
They could have gone out and bought another lot. They were looking for a good deal. And I don't exclude, I don't excuse it. I just say, like you say, we have to be more responsible by including those things. And please, this is for sale. Please contact these numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I'm going
to have
people.
To work with Doug on that.
And keep in mind that we use
that would really
we use a third-party company called Bids for...
yeah, but we can give them content.
We can give them the notice.
Bid for Assets.
We can give them content.
And so there's two places, that the Treasurer's website, and then when they actually go to do the sales, they go to Bid for Assets, and they run the actual auction.
Right,
online.
So you put the same info on both, both sites.
Yeah.
The easy ones where I've sympathized with people a lot in the past is when they, you know, they'll make an accident or they'll buy kind of an illegal or non-conforming lot, which I feel like that we there should be a more of a connection where we know if a lot's conforming or
actually,
legal.
There's a. I'll come back on that one. I'm doing some homework on that.
The harder one is this: does it perk or could you get a well? I mean, that's depending on how far you want to go with that.
Well,
that's anybody's guess.
Well, I like the idea, the middle ground here, or at least the solution to the problem. The main thing is that this doesn't happen again. When they've invested all this time and all this work, and then they get their plans, they actually get a permit, and it's like, at that point you're way late and you're just devastated, and that cannot keep repeating. We have to take action today so it's not going to happen again.
We've had two situations in just a short period of time, and from what I understand, when she talked to the community development department, she. Talking about getting an attorney, they said you don't need to even bother with that because this has been played out in the courts and the county won. So she was like, oh.
That's good advice.
Well, if the properties are divided in violation of platting, they are played out. I mean, that law is pretty well established, and in fact, it's statutory.
So that tells us two things. First of all, we probably could win this if it went to court. But the other thing it tells us, the more subliminal message is, this has happened before.
But that happened, I mean, again, if you want to go to the heart of this issue, really where you need to resolve this is, people should not be able to tax divide their property without ensuring that both parcels are legal.
Well,
I mean, if we change that law, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Well, that's a state law.
I understand that, but at least we could try and change
it. Well, I understand that, but I don't want to expand the scope of this to be something more than that. I'm doing some work when it comes to the legal lot determination process. I think we're going way over, making a lot of extra work, and I think there's a simple way. I'll find out whether or not that's true when I meet with Marty and Chuck Kreider and the other gal.
We want to know what we can do today, and I think that's what we need to ask you. It's another elected official. Can we make it a policy or a request? A request he might turn down so he can't afford to do it. If we set a policy, then he'll have to do it. Just slip a piece of paper into the bid sheet with the phone numbers of people to contact.
A little bit more.
We can post it online.
If Holly works with Doug, we can draft it all up. I'm sure he will agree to put that out there.
I don't think Doug will have any problems with that.
That works for that one and down the road.
That works for the future.
Right.
And this one, and the other one, where this other lady has an issue with the septic, I think she just needs to get a hold of a septic person. Such as, I say, Cal Eck, he does so much of them.
He does.
They have the knowledge.
I think his son is.
They got nearly 3 acres here. Heaven forbid. We do this all day long on 1 acre. So there's a way that could be done. Yeah. And they have all these new septic systems in there. It may cost her a little bit more than the others, but at least she'll salvage a lot.
Then, since I am no septic expert by any means, shouldn't we have somebody in our community development department help assist her in that? Or somebody that's knowledgeable
in
that?
I don't think we can do that legally, because if I recommend Cal Eck and he does a terrible job, she'll come back and sue us for recommending him.
So. Actually, we'll go back to her and we'll help her as best we can to actually make this buildable, because we're free to do that. You're a private citizen, you can help to do that. Mm-hmm. And see if that will give her relief in this case. Okay. So that's one that will help this particular citizen. And the other is, you're already going to work together to make sure that we do whatever we can to make our citizens successful, focus on mm-hmm. their success. We're already very safe on making sure we're not liable.
Well,
but that's a really wrong message.
I'm not trying to just make us not liable. I really am trying to help people who want to buy land
yeah.
at these auctions.
Yeah.
Just you have to understand there's risk involved when you buy yeah. property yeah. that's being sold for taxes.
And we want to reduce that risk for to make it so that they can reduce the risk. Because here's how.
What you almost need to tell people is there's a reason this property went into foreclosure, because if it was that valuable, somebody probably would have paid the taxes on it.
Well, got that, but
okay.
We need the roadmap. Who to call?
I understand.
Yeah. We'll do that.
And okay. What questions to ask?
We'll make sure that gets done.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Anything else?
No.
Thank goodness.
All the interesting
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, go.
Okay.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Woof. Kind of shot your afternoon.
What are you doing tomorrow?
Yeah, what are you doing tomorrow?
Hi, Dolly. How are you?
Okay, we've got four vacancy requests here. One is we have a natural resource specialist out of Environmental Services that Don Benton wants to replace.
And that's just simply one person leaving, so he's going to replace that one.
Correct.
And they do the
wetland and habitat stuff. Are we good to go on that?
Good to go. Comply.
Okay, Janelle Tomlin from DCS took a promotion and is now downstairs in our auditor's office. She's a full-time employee out of Community Services, office assistant too. Sure. We're just simply replacing her.
That's okay.
Okay. Michael Mabry, need I say more?
He needs to be
retiring.
Now that was to hand to you.
We ran off another guy.
Vote on next week, but we need to get moving on that.
No, he's gone.
He's gone.
Okay.
I have an appointment with Michael Mabry?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay,
that's a debriefing?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and the next one is Kelly Sills. Do we replace Kelly?
I want to really talk about this position. I mean, Axel does too.
Yeah.
We need another analyst. That's one big reason. There's a lot of stuff I haven't done in the past because I knew Axel was overloaded. So I would probably like to fill it as an analyst position. And if you think of something else to include in it, I'm not sure. But I just think that we've cut no less than three people out of this office since I've been here. And we're really on a tight shoestring. And you see how much work we have, and you have Anna. And I'm stuck with Axel.
I'm not sure I got that.
Is that mildly? It's a real bummer.
So
I hit the N factor.
Yeah, and so
I'd like to have half the knowledge.
Yeah, well, if he had half your organizational talent, he'd be awesome.
There we go.
Yeah, if he cleaned off his desk the way you keep his cleaned off.
Okay, well, can Axel kind of go over the proposal?
I would like to have some input back on this.
Yeah, go ahead, Axel.
Well, I mean, it's the board's decision whether or not they want an employee solely focused on economic
development. Okay, anything else you want to
say? I should have got it in less than 4 words.
Oh, is it really 10 after 4?
Yeah.
We're having fun.
But, I mean, my hope was eventually to get some help in the office, but it was my assumption in filling this out that the first step would be to fill Kelly's position because the board... It was my thought that the board does want to have somebody dedicated full-time to economic development. So we would put that out internally, initially. We would do that first,
and then depending on how that went, we would look for the policy help second. Mm-hmm. But that's the board's prerogative.
And then we just take Axel up to Redline until all that happens.
Well, I will note, I gave Kelly a hug yesterday, and he did leave, so he's gone. And everything he was doing is now either on my desk or somehow
not being done.
He gave him a hug and said, please don't leave.
All right, man.
Yeah, but when stuff. You hung onto his leg as he was going out the door.
It got embarrassing.
So I think that this position might be able to double as an economic development assistant or part of it, because we have Marlia. Before we had Marlia, Jeff, and Kelly, and we recognized the need for a heavier economic development position. And I don't want to do away with this one completely. So why I would like to really have a I still think the other one can happen, needs to happen also.
With a policy assistant?
And the analyst.
Yeah. So we're looking at a two-phase, said. Phil Kelly's position first, and then follow that up with the policy assistant.
Yeah, I think Kelly's position, he did other things, such as economic development, too. And so as we fill this position, we may use this individual for that too, maybe. And it's something as we feel our way along here to see what we're going to need, because we're looking at other positions. As before, we were thinking about 11, 8, and 1. I don't think we could do that.
Okay. Well, our thought was that because the railroad coordinator position has an economic development component in it,
right?
That if we combine that function with the economic development program writ large for the entire county, that would be a full-time position.
Yes.
And that we hire somebody to do that work.
Yeah. That's kind of what I'm thinking,
that's what
too.
We're looking for.
That it becomes an economic development and railroad coordinator at the same time.
Correct.
Economic development first, railroad second.
Correct.
And then if we need to, this could be an assistant to that position. Maybe.
Well,
and like we have Marlia.
The third position would be the policy analyst, and the thought would be that we bring, see, Axel's an 824, an M824. The policy assistant would be an M820.
Didn't tell me anything.
That would.
It's on par with the coordinator position.
The railroad coordinator position, and Axel would provide guidance to that person. And meeting the requirements of the office for constituent relations and policy issues.
Yeah, and I think what was it? This Kelly was a M24.
He was the same as me in terms of classification. Because that position, I don't know if you remember when it changed, but Kelly was originally a policy analyst, and then he became the county's economic development manager. Mm-hmm. You can have a working title according to HR, so that's basically what happened, but he stayed within that classification. I proposed just filling his position as economic development manager because the board's been fairly clear about wanting to just have somebody solely focused on that. And so step one for me was, let's get Kelly's position filled sooner rather than later, and then depending how that happens, go from there with policy help. But certainly I would like some policy help.
So he was called an economic development manager,
mm-hmm.
and you're telling me that an analyst is the same rate?
Yeah,
because I would think it'd be less.
If you go to the position control, if you go to the county's classification system, he was a senior policy analyst, but he called himself the economic development manager.
So we're really talking salary scales and titles. In our office here, there's three things you can be. You can be a policy assistant, a senior policy assistant, or a senior policy analyst. Kelly was a senior policy analyst who became the economic development manager.
Well, I thought he made more than this.
Well, that's monthly. You'd have to multiply that by 12.
Oh, Look at monthly, okay.
Yeah, I tried to pay him back.
He was hoping that's why he
left.
Wait, take a few more of those.
76.
What a deal.
Yeah. Top 76.
I ate a lot of beans and rice.
Okay. So this is monthly. So I'm trying to get a range because the position here is not the same as your position.
This position is graded exactly the same.
This position would be totally different in duties, but it would be the same pay scale. So this person would be paid within the same scale.
It should be the same pay scale.
But it has to be because it's the same exact position classification. It's an MA-24.
That would change the classification for this position.
To what?
Otherwise, this person should be making the same as Kelly. Axel.
And he should.
Axel works a lot harder than an analyst.
Well, here there's a range, so you have room to where you can hire someone in these steps, but
I'm good.
What's the low end yearly?
I like to put it out for bid by qualifications.
That's what we do. Somebody will say this
by qualification.
When you advertise a job, you advertise the high and low range. And then you say the salary is based on qualifications.
Yeah, and then based on the quality that you get, you pay accordingly.
You negotiate.
That's the low end right there, 64,956.
It's like when we hired Ann Christian to be our engineering defense coordinator, she was remarkably experienced. So we started her higher than we started the previous coordinator.
And low end, high end.
And when you guys hired me, I went through the interview then with the board, and then Bill called me, and he said, hey, we would like to offer you the job, but we have to talk about the steps and the salary. And then we had a negotiation basically on the steps, and that's, so it's based on qualification.
Well, it really has to do with what is the job description we want this person to do. And we don't necessarily have to inherit whoever was in that office before. It really has to do with what do you want this person to do.
That's right.
And then once you define that, then you can say, well, what's pay scale aligns most closely with that job description.
So an analyst research person, similar to what we had in the legislature, I don't know what they mean. What'd Kelly make? I heard he made 85.
He was at like 7,000.
He was right around there.
He was at
the
top end of this.
So pretty close to 90,000.
Correct.
No, he was, maybe 85.
But, so Kelly had been a senior policy analyst here for a number of years, 13, 14.
What may be a good path forward would be to imagine if you had this person here now, what task would you give them? And just make a bunch of bullets, and then just simply say, okay, imagine what kind of help, because this person is mainly to serve you. What would you have them do? And once you get that defined, then we can boil that down to more of a job description.
Well,
I think the question that I'd like the board to answer today is, do you want an economic development director or manager at the county or not? Because that's step one for me.
I think so.
Well, okay. Here's
because then we can move forward with this, and I can bring you some other proposal for policy help next week.
When we defined Jeff Swanson's position, we were all very much actively involved in that. And we started out as a railroad person. And we moved away from that as economic development and the with a strength in railroad. Because railroad is one corridor, but we've got multiple corridors throughout the county to focus on.
But the job description in the announcement said, you got a railroad that goes like this through the county. Here's your focus.
No.
Yes.
Well,
it's called the Rail Corridor Employment Manager.
It's a long
rail way. Corridor. It doesn't say Clark County Economic Development Manager, who, oh, by the way, does railroad.
Into his job description, we added the economic part.
We did.
For the rail, rail corridor.
No.
Let's pull it and read
it. You're right.
It says
rail corridor economic development.
Believe me, I agonized over this. It's chiseled burned.
I remember.
In my brain.
We agonized
we had a number
over
of
this.
Meetings
I remember.
Well, okay. And we're getting smarter, okay?
Yeah, now we're going to broaden it to include interacting with ports and
cities.
And
I have a lot. When it comes to economic development, that's kind of a broad category. We make a lot of assumptions what that includes, what that means. Basically, a lot of that comes into, also includes marketing for Clark County. I would love to see our PIO office be a marketing arm for Clark County. It's not.
Oh, yeah.
Mary Kelts has definitely boo-hooed that idea every time we brought it up. We are not marketing Clark County at all. We need to.
No, I wouldn't argue with you. On that little project list is an economic development website. No work has been done on that. Not one stitch of work. Okay, we hired an economic development manager who knows economic development. That'll be a primary task. You get a marketing website up and running. El pronto.
Yeah.
But again, I think a key to this is why I brought and talked to Mark and why we brought this position to you first to recruit for it is because Kelly, because he evolved from that policy position, the policy analyst position, into something else, he was doing both. And so I think the argument in the case that's been made is that Kelly didn't have time, even though he was the economic development manager, to do some of the things that he would have liked to do if he was fully devoted to it, because he was doing policy stuff and charter and other things. And
plus, so I think we put, not to disparage previous administrations, but I think in some ways we paid lip service to economic development.
Yeah,
we gave a guy a title, and we're good
to
go.
That's all it was.
We're good to go. Okay, and that's not what we're doing now.
Nope, I want it to be real,
and we want it to be real as well. That's why we need your approval to hire Kelly's replacement, so we get a real guy in there.
Well, I think before we say hire her as a replacement, I think it's very important that we define that job description like we did. We worked very, very hard on Jeff Swanson's position. And the definition of that job description is something that we need to be up front and participate in.
Right, right here.
Okay, before we say, okay, hire up.
We've got two items already on here.
Well,
yeah.
If you give us the green light to hire, we'll do all the work to your satisfaction that will accomplish the hiring action. I don't want to spend I don't want to spend a bunch of time busting my chops on a job description, without the certainty that I'm going to be able to hire somebody.
It's our responsibility to participate in providing that insight of what that job description can be, and we'll pick your brains and collaborate on something that makes sense for that.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying okay yet, because Kelly left yesterday, so.
Yeah, time is of the essence.
We have the current job description. I know that the railroad is important, and that may come into consideration. So, you know, HR has said the job description is broad enough to encompass that. If you want to add things, change it, obviously.
Yeah, I
want to
add it, change it. Yep.
Yeah.
I want to pick other people's brains too. I want to pick Jeff Swanson's brain. Marlia, I want to pick her brain. Anybody who has
a lot of brain picking.
Yeah, it is, and it'll make it better. It will be able to end up with somebody that's really real, real helpful, very capable, and going to make a difference. It won't just be a figurehead only.
Is it a good idea to take Jeff's current job description because of the thought that you put into it and realize that
starting base?
Start with that
yes.
and take the other job description and keep it in your pocket or put it side by side, but
yep.
expand out to
yeah.
include
Kelly's job description.
You guys already wrote that one.
Yes.
Yeah, because Kelly's has a Kelly's job description
good point.
Is 13 years old.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And it has never, I don't believe, been rewritten.
I don't think he's ever done that description either.
No. So
like Axel, you know, he does that.
Look at it. Go scratch.
Yeah.
Scratch.
Other duties assigned.
So we'll take Jeff's. We'll beef it up and add some stuff, and then we'll let you start
the
picking brains.
I think we're going to keep both positions. We're not going to eliminate one. We just have to define this one and then expand on Jeff.
There we go.
And we're gonna. You guys are gonna approve opening the position like next week,
maybe. Yeah.
Well, yeah. It has to do. It's not like it's not a timeline that drives it.
Well,
it's the vision that drives it. In fact,
it's just poor guy.
just to throw something out on this. I don't like the idea of just saying, oh, you're not an economic development guy. No, you're economic development and marketing. I like the marketing part is a really important part of that.
But I will remind you, this person is going to be hired and fired by you, and they're going to live very close to you. So we can put it all in job description, but the bottom line with this individual is they're going to do what you tell them to do, because that's the job.
And we need to think through, what do we want them to do?
Yeah.
The thing that kills me is that I got bam, bam, bam. three in a row, and then one of the most important jobs in the county, we're
don't
sitting here, we're having a major league muscle cramp.
Let me rephrase that for
some
you.
Guy can't be thankful
for anything.
We got the easy,
easy no-brainer ones done, and we're putting more horsepower where it counts the most.
Okay.
So, Axel,
right.
Do you have anything?
Okay.
No.
No? You're burned out. No,
you're right.
Holly.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Speaking of feedback, Jeff Mize and I need some feedback from both commissioners about the State of the County remarks. It's 2 weeks from tomorrow. So
yeah, kidding. Yes, 2 weeks from tomorrow?
What I can do about
how much time do we have?
March 6th?
I mean,
six,
right?
Speaking
or time. 7th.
March 6th. Yeah.
I believe the entire thing for the three of you goes 40 minutes.
So divide.
Right.
So we're going to take a portion, each one, Mr.
Yeah,
and
you,
you get
your
five,
charge, so whatever slice you give me, I'll take that.
I was trying to give Steve a larger piece than what he had. I talked to him about it, and I was kind of going over his and yours, and I went over my first part, and then Steve's, and then yours, and
well, maybe what you want to do is call Jeff and have him come up and go over it with you, say
no.
What about moving time?
No, no. I'm confused enough. you're proud of me. I finally got over to where I can add things and change things. And what I'm doing my changes or recommendations. I'm doing them in blue. So that way you come back and say, Tom, that really sounds terrible.
Okay. So I need to know how many minutes you're going to give me.
25.
Where have you got on? Have you looked at your part? Have you looked at your part yet?
I haven't seen my part.
I haven't either.
You haven't seen it?
No.
Okay.
Is there a part? I met
part.
With Jeff, but he took a bunch of notes. And
Jeff has copies,
Anna,
and I believe.
Anna, do you have his part?
I don't.
You never received your part.
I don't know for sure. There is a folder in there that says State of the County. I'll go look at it.
Good chance it's in there.
It might could be.
Pretty clever name, but it's not in there.
Hey.
Don't worry, your costume will be ready in time.
Yeah, we got to get the orange hair and the little red ball for
that. I'm not sure how that hat's going to fit, though.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
A couple more things about the State of the County is I talked yesterday with Commissioner Mielke about a device if you would like a device, and I believe you used an iPad last year, and
yeah.
That worked
yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
We're going to load onto an iPad as well as print.
Yeah.
For Commissioner Mielke, you guys all get to decide how you wanted to do it last year.
Yeah.
Two iPads and one.
Yeah. So, Holly, I was just kind of throwing out other ideas out there what we might be able to use. One was the print, one was a teleprompter, one was.
Johnny is looking into
stone tablets.
Sort of
stone tablets.
Oh, the Obama
stone tablets.
Look,
tell him. Yeah.
The very important bulletproof looking thing. Because that venue doesn't have certain electronic equipment, we are having somebody bring in some other outside stuff, and I've just gotten.
So Obama does so well with those. I thought I'd try them.
Okay. And so Johnny's going to ask this person who's bringing in additional things whether he has those, whether they're workable, whether they're affordable. The other option you threw out was a screen at the back of the room, but Johnny feels very strongly that that room is so large that the print would have to be this big and probably be on somebody's face at the back of the room. So we would like to eliminate that option.
No screen at all?
Okay. Not in the back of the room as a teleprompter in the back.
For somebody to read, you mean?
Right. So if Commissioner Mielke wants to read it without looking like this, and we can, and the podium is tilted, and we can continue, build that up. We'll make it work so you're not talking to your tie. But too far in the back of the room is not going to
work. We talked about one time I was having trouble with my bifocals. And so to get down to the bottom of the page, I just go, what?
Right.
So what I did, I just filled the top half of each page.
Oh, that's
which
good.
I think is brilliant. So, yeah.
Well, thank you.
Do one, if you can do one thing. Last year we had this microphone that it kept going.
Yeah.
Okay. Get us a real microphone that
real microphone
behaves
now.
Itself.
Okay,
wow. That you're wide open for a joke on that. I think I'll let that go.
We also have made a call to the countywide chaplaincy, and they are in agreement to do it. They had a meeting this morning, and so they hope to I hope to hear back by the end of the week who would be on tap to do this. If we haven't heard by the end of the week, I'm calling on Monday to revisit that one. The other one thing I had for you is Neil Burkhart, the former Marine who tackled the woman with the gun, is demurring from interviews and attention right now. I finally got a hold of the PIO for that building, for that office. She said he's a very private person anyway, and we've confirmed the man at 31 years old has no Facebook page that we can find.
Somebody
thought that meant
private. So he doesn't want to interview with anybody.
He does not.
He doesn't. No recognition at the moment.
At the moment, he says. She said it's still very fresh. It traumatized not only him but the entire building, and he's not ready for attention or thanks.
Okay.
And so I said we'll just check back with you and give my number.
Okay. We respect that.
We have a couple other things we're recognizing.
Well, Pete Capel accepted Pete the invitation.
I think we have one from DES.
Oh, the Neighborhood Association is recognizing two people.
But we don't say who they are.
No, there was an achievement award.
Sally Fisher? Was it Sally Fisher? No.
I'm not saying because it's a surprise at the event.
I'm talking about something else. There's achievement award that DES received.
Don't know about
that. Okay, we'll work on that out.
The other. And then we have the neighborhood recognition is one you're talking about.
Correct. Correct.
You just don't want to let the cat out of the bag here.
I didn't say that.
Right. I know. I just want to make sure we don't.
And
it's a big cat.
And actually, I'll give you a one sentence briefing after this meeting about another question you had.
Okay. Just to build suspense for the audio file.
There you go.
Must attend in person.
We done?
4:30.
Okay, thank you.
To win.
We're done.
Yeah.